the show.
Hey everyone, and welcome to this week's episode of The Boundless Show. I'm your host, Lisa Anderson, here with the guys, Ted, Steve, and Mott.
Hi, hey, Lisa.
Whoa.
Hi. Very nice, Steve. Where's the cough button?
Whoa. Steve is apparently recovering from his TB, and so he's back he's back in the office. Good to hear. That's not good. Ted and I each took a cough drop. Maybe mm-hmm. you need one, too.
Yeah.
It's blue.
We took these out of Dr. Dobson's stash. They're sitting here on the table.
But it is the season of coughing.
It is.
That's what we do.
Mm. That's unfortunate. Well, on today's show, or this week's show, because we're weekly still, right? We're going to go daily probably within like a week. Bam. I love just giving announcements that may or may not be true. So keep listening, folks, because you never know when that may happen. But on this week's show, we're going to be talking to Kay Heimowitz. Many of you maybe have read her stuff because Candace talks about her all the time. Candace just can't stop talking about her because she's so awesome. Anyway, her name is Kay. She's from the Manhattan Institute. She writes for City Journal, and she's written some blazacious articles on men and women, young men and women, basically in the challenge of just growing up in this generation and what it looks like to transition into adulthood. So she spoke here at Focus, and so we nabbed her for an interview. We like her, and of course, some of the things she said, I just about imploded, so you'll hear the consternation in my voice related to that. Anyway, we interview her. And then Candace will join me for the inbox today discussing basically women. What are we talking about, women being attractive? How come it's always on us?
I don't even know we nailed a question yet, so surprise.
Candace will call in. She has to call in for this one. So when she calls in, she will give me the word as to what we're going to talk about. So stay tuned. But the other thing that we want to talk about today is October. October is Clergy Appreciation Month, everyone. I hope you know that because it's been going on for a long time, okay? So we're going to talk today about appreciating our pastors, and we all have kind of different pastors. Except for Ted, because he doesn't even go to church, but whatever.
I missed a week.
Oh, you missed a week. Okay. No,
Ted's like there 18 services a week playing in the worship
band. I was going to say, Ted would appreciate his pastor if he weren't so busy just writing songs or whatever he's doing all the time. I don't even know. So dealing with equipment.
Publishing comments on my iPod.
That's true. Tweeting the service back and forth. Yeah. So, but it's Clergy Appreciation Month, you guys, and Focus always gets behind this every year. Many of you know we have a pastoral ministries department that handles this, parsonage.org. Go and check it out and find out how you can appreciate your pastors. But as we get into our discussion, let's talk about what we love about our pastors, because I love them. I think they're underappreciated.
They are.
Most of them don't even get paid like anything.
Okay.
Well, I'll start by saying, as a PK, someone who grew up as a preacher's kid, I know that anything you can do to encourage people to stop and find an excuse to thank their pastor is helpful, because I know my dad just, you know, took a lot of grief, and it wasn't often enough that the church could do something to say thanks to balance out, you know, all the headaches you take on.
Yeah.
I know he ran crazy hours, was available in the middle of the night for people mm-hmm. with all kinds of counseling needs, and, you know, you work long hours, and you know, they do tend to hear more criticism than they do thanks, so.
It's a thankless job.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A lot of expectations.
Yeah, when I was a new believer, I used to go up after most services and tell the pastor how I was convicted. It was my way of appreciating the pastor. And he would always say, "I'm glad it was helpful. I'm glad it was helpful." Every time it was the same response. So I don't appreciate my pastor anymore.
Nope. Have any of our recent sermons been helpful to you, Mark?
Yeah, they have. You know, I really appreciate Mark Bates, our pastor, and our pastoral team. And you know, it often comes in my mind to send him an email or to write him a note or to go up to him to them and say thank you, mm-hmm. or to tell them how it was helpful to me. But, you know, the thought leaves my mind or I forget. I mean, it happened a few weeks ago when I just really enjoyed the entire worship service, the music and everything. And I wanted to write a little note to the worship leader, and I forgot. So I guess I'm talking to myself here to say, whenever that thought enters your mind, make a note and actually do it.
Of course, when you write a note to the worship leader and you say, "Worship was great this week. you're implying that the other 51 weeks of the year was, eh.
Well, maybe I'm implying that it's exceptional that
okay,
week.
I'm just playing with you. No, I love when I hear that my pastors are going on a retreat or going on a vacation or taking a week off and going somewhere, because I know that they're working all the time. I mean, mm-hmm. like you say, 24/7. A couple of, maybe a year ago, I remember our song leader was, he led the service on a Saturday night. And then later that evening, somebody in the church died. So he was called, he was on call that weekend. So he went to the person's house and was there for hours helping out. And then he had to lead music again Sunday morning. Mm-hmm. And so they are on call all the time. And
yeah.
So like you say, yeah. so often underappreciated. And another thing is we tend to be critical of them and we forget that our pastors are, just like us, sinners.
Yeah.
They make mm-hmm. mistakes. They make bad judgments sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we should give them a break, just like we hope people give us a break.
You know, I think of my brother who became pastor of my dad's church. My dad actually transitioned the church to him the week before he died. And then here my brother, who's grieving the loss of his dad, is having to step into the pulpit and lead this new congregation. Well, then he starts having just major problems in his family. And here he's got to manage the things he's caring for personally in the midst of leading this church. And then you're right. I mean, it's this highs and lows of he'll go and lead a perform a marriage ceremony for a couple or do some premarital counseling, and that's really a high involved there, and then turn right around and the next day bury somebody or visit somebody in the hospital or meet with a couple whose marriage is falling apart. And to do that and to constantly have a fresh word from God, it just is taxing.
So is a thank you enough? I mean, it seems like we need to do more than just a simple thank you.
Well, let me tell you what I do. I make sure that I don't grumble. Against any of the pastors. I don't allow anybody to grumble about them. Mm. I always affirm them when I'm not with them. I affirm their leadership, affirming that God has placed them in leadership over us to care for us. That's what Scripture says. Just to affirm their leadership. Even though they may make mistakes from time to time, I still affirm their role, their authority.
Do you threaten those people who grumble?
Oh, I kick them in the shins.
Nice. You know, it's interesting because they our clergy department here at Focus on the Family actually did a recent survey of pastors, and I think they surveyed over 2,000 pastors and discovered that the majority of respondents work well over 50 hours a week. And very few of them indicated that they have close, personal, accountable relationships, which is something that we talk about here on The Boundless Show. And if our pastors are having difficulty finding that and finding a way to balance their church responsibilities with their home life, I mean, that's just a reason I think that we can be in prayer for them right there, because that's huge.
I think it might be easier for our pastors, since each of our churches is a large church, at least 1,000, 2,000. So there's a pastoral team that always works together.
But the average pastor is it's a smaller church and that they don't have the amount of sabbatical or vacation breaks.
Yeah. The average church in the U.S. is under 200 people. Yeah. So for the most part, so it's hard. Sometimes we have to remember that. But
they should all get together and become mega churches.
What if they? That's true. Surely if they just join a network or, you know, whatever. So what would you guys say?
They just had a vacation Ponzi scheme that all these pastors could.
That would be helpful. What would you guys say? Because I think of, you know, sermons, and I've actually emailed our pastor several times recently during the week just saying I really appreciated this week's sermon. Thanks so much for that or whatever. But there are other reasons, I think, why I like my pastors. And I know as I can speak as a single woman in my church, there have been times when my pastors have really kind of stepped up to bat for me and defending me and kind of you know, advocating for me, whether in issues in the church, you know, because I'm in some leadership roles there, or even just kind of stepping in. You know, I lost my dad several years ago, and some of my pastors, for even being in a large church, have really gotten to know me and have taken, you know, an interest in me and invested in me. And so I've really appreciated that. I think also, and Mott can speak to this because we go to the same church, our church is probably the first time, or attending this church is the first time where I've really seen pastors exercise church discipline well. Mm-hmm. Like for a church as large as ours, I've seen instances where an individual has had their spouse cheat on them and the pastors have stepped in there where there's been a situation of strife between two believers or two members of the church. And in our church, when you sign up for membership, you do sign up mm-hmm. for accountability in a very mm-hmm. real way. And I've appreciated, and there are many, I mean, there are crazy things that our pastors do that we don't even know about, like just administrative details and all this other stuff that I don't even know how they keep up with it, because then they're really in people's lives and it must just be exhausting.
It's a good point too, that it is usually pastors, plural, that the senior pastor can get a lot of the attention during an appreciation period, but that you got a lot of lay people who are bivocational or, you know, really trying to add the pastoral load on top of other things that maybe don't get as good spotlight sometimes like the senior pastor does during appreciation time.
Exactly. And Mott mentioned our senior pastor, but I don't even, these guys need to listen to the show. Do you guys even listen to the show,
no,
Doug and Brian?
Don't
I mean,
listen.
Honestly.
And I'm a little jealous because you said they give you personal attention. They don't give me personal attention.
Well,
me neither.
Maybe you just need to, I don't know, join a committee.
But I still appreciate them.
Okay. Well, so all this to say, I mean, this is a great month. I mean, obviously, you know, we shouldn't have to focus on theme months to just get something done. Okay, people. I mean, we should know how to do this. But anyway, October is Clergy Appreciation Month. I think Focus started this in 1994. So, you know, we've been doing this for quite a while. Another thing I want to highlight is HB London, who's in charge of this division here, has just written a book called Pause, Recharge, Refresh. And it is for pastors. It is a devotional, a 365-day devotional. That actually includes scripture. We appreciate that. We're not into these devotionals where they just share some chicken soup for the soul nonsense. I just can't even stand it. I blaze away. But this is a real devotional. So maybe get a copy of that for your pastor. You can order it here at focusonthefamily.com or just find it at your Christian bookstore, whatever. But I have a copy and it's good. I've seen it so far. So do that for your pastor and do other things for your pastor and then write to us, editor@boundless.org, and tell us what you're doing. We need creative ideas. So I think our Sunday school community is going to get together and do like a lunch or something for our pastors, and maybe like a gift card. I think
gift
that'd be fun.
Gift card's a great idea.
Yeah, because one of our pastors like runs, and so we can, every year, we've done this for his birthday, like we buy his shoes, like that year's shoes.
Wow.
If you're someone like me who runs like every seventh day, then you don't need shoes for like 10 years, but he runs a lot. So anyway, that's just some ideas. Yo, thanks everyone. We are in the studio. Candace is joining me. Hello, Candace.
Hi, Lisa.
Hey.
It's good to be back.
This has been like 3 days this week. I
know. My kids are having babysitter fatigue at this point. So.
That's okay. It's fun to get the variety. We are actually in the studio here at Focus with Kay Heimowitz. Kay, welcome.
Thank you so much.
Kay is a fellow actually at the Manhattan Institute, and she's a contributing editor of City Journal. Kay is also the author of the book Marriage and Caste in America, and I think you have been referenced actually on our blog before. Candace and Steve know of Kay's work very well, and I've read a couple articles that you have written, both about men and women, specifically young adults, so shocking that we're talking to you boundless people about this.
That's right.
You are these people. So that's pretty cool. Anyway, but we are so privileged to have you here in Colorado Springs, and to kind of Glenn Stanton here at Focus, and many of you boundless folks know of Glenn as well. But he brings in these like authors and researchers and all these folks to kind of provide insight culturally and demographic type of research and info for us. So we just piggyback on that when we can and pull you guys in so we can join in a conversation with you about some of this stuff. And today we're going to kind of talk about, Kay actually just spoke to a group of us here at Focus, kind of about this cultural phenomenon of basically that is happening among young adults of, you know, how did we, you said you didn't want to call it emerging adulthood, but more of a, I don't know, what are we calling it?
Just well, I was using the term pre-adulthood, but I'm not sure whether that'll stick or not. But the point is that because people are marrying so much later than they used to, there's this new period of life. And actually, sociologists are very interested in it. Those are the ones who call it emerging adulthood, because really, we've never seen anything quite like it. It's not that there haven't been periods in history where people have married well into their 20s. There have been. But they were always connected to families in other ways, you know, either living with their parents or living in a boarding house with a family or that kind of thing. And they were never kind of footloose and fancy free in the city the way popular culture is describing so many of these pre-adults. So because they're getting married so late, there's, you know, a question. Well, what happens during this period of life? And how should you be thinking about it? Is it just for fun? Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, certainly you're getting your career in line and then trying to finish your education, get your first job and that kind of thing. But when it comes to relationships, how are we supposed to be thinking about this period?
Sure. And the two, actually, and I think this will kind of settle a lot of things in or give you a point of reference. She actually referenced two films to describe basically men and women in this stage of life. And one would be Sex and the City, and kind of that young woman who is climbing up the ladder. She has a great job. She has a great education. She hangs out with her girlfriends and does all kinds of great things in her leisure time, basically right. Everything from clubbing to spas. And, you know, this is obviously my life as much
right.
as
I
can.
Right. I mean, Lisa,
be
you know this, right?
Okay. I can't speak to the spa situation because that's a little bit pot kettle, but I'm not quite the clubber, I guess. But anyway, so that would be the one. And then we see films like Knocked Up and some of those others like The Hangover now or some of the other newer ones right. that kind of showcase this male stereotype that, you know, may or may not be true among some or other, you know, boundless listeners or beyond in the culture. But it's just kind of a great divide, I think, that seems to be right. widening. And you talked a lot about that.
Right. I refer to the Knocked Up characters as a child man. Mm-hmm. You know, some people say, well, oh, he's just a movie character. But in fact, it does reflect something, I think, about the culture that there are, certainly when, you know, I showed a lot of charts and stuff at this talk today. And one of the things they show is that women are outdoing men in college. They're out earning men in many cities when they're first graduated from college. They are doing very, very well in the workplace. Again, we're talking about college-educated women here. I want to be careful because the story is very different for lower-income people. But we're talking about college-educated women. They are men's equal, at least, you know, and in many cases doing better. And this creates a whole set of questions about how you behave in dates, what your expectations are for the future. Are these guys who are earning less than you or not quite as ambitious than you as you? Are these suitable husbands, or even are they, you know, when it comes to dating, who pays?
Kate, you can imagine that when we've blogged on Boundless about the child man, that we get some angry responses.
Yes, I've seen some.
Well, I don't want to, and this is where Candace needs to talk, because you, actually, Kay talked about this this morning, that, you know, when she wrote these two articles, one on the culture of women and one on men, she got responses of rage from men.
Right,
and
yeah.
I'm kind of like, as a single woman, just wanting to be quiet here. So Candace, right. please
well,
speak to this.
Well, I find it interesting that women seem to have a good, bad problem, while the men seem to have a bad problem.
Yeah.
Is the problem just that the women are too good?
No, I, you know,
is that why?
Yes, I'm awesome.
No, look, I think that some of the kind of product of living alone, of living, of pursuing your career dreams and your gym dreams, you know, as you're working on your next, on your working out in the gym and that kind of thing. You look, I think everybody living in this stage of life, pre-adulthood, is pretty much attuned to their own needs. Mm-hmm. And that can be problematic for women as well. Certainly the men who were angry with me said, and I have no reason to discount this, that they encounter a lot of very self-involved women who are not going to be such great wives themselves. Mm-hmm. So, no, I don't mean to. I got accused of this of being too kind to the girls. But I don't want to do that. I think that first of all, I want to make clear that the guys really are in a bad situation. They're not being mentored. They're not being fathered. They're not, you know, they don't have good models. And the women are not making their needs clear a lot in many cases where, you know, they're willing to go along with the clubbing and the bar hopping and stuff like that. And just kind of think, well, the guys will, they'll come along, you know, at some point and become husbands. Well, maybe not, you know, maybe they won't.
Well, there's been a lot of research coming out, or at least articles that I've read, more popular articles that say that maybe feminism wasn't such a great deal for women after all. But reading about the child man, I'm wondering if maybe feminism is a bad rap for everybody when it's taken to its extreme. Certainly not talking about women's right to vote or, you know, the right to own property. We all agree that it's wonderful to be equally free human.
Right.
But when you start talking about what you're saying, that women are almost better than men, that idea that I am a woman and better than you.
Well, I think that for women have this going for them. They have an aspiration. You know, most women know that they want children, even if it's only somewhere in the future. And they know that they will have children, and they know also that they have a biological sell-by date.
Yeah.
You know. And I think that creates a different mentality for women than men. I think in their 20s, they know they don't have a lot of time to get it together. And they're much more directed and motivated to achieve and achieve quickly. So I think part of the slacker phenomenon insofar as it exists is that the guys really don't have a due date, a sell-by date. They don't have a date where they have to, I shouldn't admit this, but my son said to me at some point when he was going off to Africa to start a job there, I said, you know, don't wait forever. He said, Mom, I'm a guy, you know, I can.
No biological clock ticking, right?
Yeah, and you know what? He's right, you know. I mean, we have to be concerned about his soul, if that's the right word, that is, or his psychology that would allow him to be a good partner, a good husband. But in terms of what he needs from a spouse, he'll be able to have children. Mm-hmm. If he marries 38?
You know, when I was in my mid-20s, it was pre-Sex in the City, and I lived in the city, but I wasn't sexy.
I don't believe that.
I got sexy after I got married, which is how it should be. Yeah. But I look at those pictures, and there's a lot to admire in those women. They're beautiful, they're thin, they're wealthy enough to buy the expensive handbags. I'm wondering if you're seeing, with women who are getting to 30 and then beyond, are they staying single young females because they have to? Whereas men are staying child men because they can.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think certainly somewhere around the mid-20s, a lot of women look around and go, oh, okay, so that was fun. You know, now I'm 26, 27, and maybe I need to think about this a little differently, or maybe, you know, also, not to be too Darwinian about this, they begin to see younger women in the clubs they're going to who maybe look a little better than they do, or they remember when they looked like that. And I think sometimes they feel like, well, okay, that's not me anymore. You know, I need to get a little bit more serious here. So I think you find a lot of women reaching 30, single women reaching 30, and feeling quite disturbed by the situation they find themselves in. And we, as a culture, are doing a terrible job of preparing young women that's what they're facing. It's such a common problem. But guys, again, the 30... You know, mm-hmm. I don't think 30 represents the same thing to a man that it does to a woman.
Yeah. Kay, I suspect that many times when you speak, you hear from women, especially, who say, so what's the solution?
Yeah.
And that was always my question. And it occurs to me, thinking about your book, Marriage and Caste in America, you talk about the need for a couple to come together and have a new mission, that children give a couple a mission that sort of recasts their marriage. I'm wondering if we need to start giving singles a mission that gives them a vision beyond the stage of career launch, where it really is all about focusing on your schedule and your ambition, to say there's something beyond.
Yeah. Well, we were talking earlier about how you're not supposed to say in this culture when you're 22, 23, I want to get married. So, you know, even if it's, you know, even to say I want to get married, maybe not tomorrow, but,
right.
you know,
yeah, someday.
That is an important goal for me. That is something that people are uncomfortable with. And I've talked also to so many parents who see as their job, and I'm talking about the parents of these young adults, of the pre-adults that I'm describing, so many parents who never, ever talk to their kids about getting married, about having children. They kind of feel almost embarrassed, like that's mm-hmm. private. Mm-hmm. You know, we leave them alone. Boy, oh boy, when it comes to college, they did not act that way at all. They were hands-on all the way.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think, and I've talked about this on the show before as well, how I think with many of our parents' generations, it was, for them, it just, you know, and I mean, this is saying it a little bit flippantly, but it did just happen.
Yeah,
you know, my mom
got
married at 21 because she met my dad at a basketball game at college, and they just got married.
Because that's what you did.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And she thought that was going to be my story, and she's just mystified by the fact that it wasn't.
Yeah.
And so it's kind of a disconnect. But that's why I think, you know, but it's hard because part of the time when you were talking earlier, I thought to myself, okay, there really is a huge responsibility here for parents and older adults to say, I mean, we shouldn't have movies like Failure to Launch, because these parents should be kicking their sons out of the house, okay?
You don't have to lure them out with a woman. Just get out.
Right. And I mean, women, for example, should be rebuked when we make man-hating remarks or when we act crazy or when whatever. But no one does. No one calls us on this. So we build our little silos of crazy and just kind of self-perpetuate.
Yeah, no, I agree.
Well, and, you know, our listeners often are frustrated because they are following the script you set forth in your Marriage and Caste. They go to school, and then they wait to have babies because they believe that babies should come after the
Absolutely.
Wedding. The problem is, and you've made a case so clearly that it's a problem when you violate that script.
Yeah.
That there's all sorts of pathologies that come when you do things out of order. But what about when you follow the order and the marriage never happens?
Yeah. You know, this is what we're trying to figure out. And look, you know, if the data is that we're going to see in the next few years is the same as it's been in the past, most women are, it's going to work out.
Yeah, eventually,
you know, as difficult as it is, and as late as it might be, and some women may find it working out when they are a little, you know, quite a bit older than they wanted to be, and may find fertility, they have fertility problems. That's going to happen. But the truth is, you know, I tend to think that most people want to have a partner in life. And we know that most people want to have children, and certainly most women would rather do that with a husband. So I think the urge is still so profound, and that we're bound to see some of this work itself out. I don't want to deny it. It's caused a lot of heartache to a lot of people.
Well, as hard as it was to read the Child Man article for the men, I'm especially thankful for the New Girl Order article, because I think it's a helpful mirror for a woman to look at this and really stop and say, is this the life I want? Is this enough? Will this keep me happy
and
well into old age?
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I think the answer that a lot of women will say, well, but I'm young.
Exactly.
So why do I know? And let's face it, you know, one of the things I felt when I was writing the new Girl Order was that there is a lot of fun to be had. You know, there didn't used to be. You know, if you were single, there weren't that many bars and pubs, and there weren't that many trips you could take. And you know, now there's just this whole arena, this whole economy, which in the article I mentioned is sometimes called the Bridget Jones economy, that there's an awful lot of pleasure to be had. Mm-hmm. It's not ultimately going to be that satisfying in the long run, but it keeps you going, and it keeps you titillated and happy and fun. You
know? Well, and I think that motivates many single women to get the degrees and to get the jobs and to climb the ladder and put in the hours, because we're going to buy that, you know, whether it's social life or whether it's whatever we're not going to get because we're not having families, we're going to buy it.
Right.
I think it's a little bit interesting though, and we've talked about this on the show before, the whole idea of work and how it's no longer acceptable, especially for men, to just get a job and be able to provide. We get into this whole self-actualization thing, and that's why you have, I mean, I probably make more money than 90% of my single male friends. Many of them are still being ski instructors and rafting guides, and they're all trying to like find themselves, and they're just out, you know, sampling careers here and there because they want to do something that they love. And it's not there's not that vision of family and kids that will keep them in one spot and get something stable or whatever. And so they're not going to take me out on a date because, quite frankly, they're going to ask me to pay, and you know, whatever.
And you're going to say no.
I guess I will. Unless I have a gift card, then I'll be like, okay, let's go.
Do they actually ask you? Would you pay?
They've never blatantly asked me, but I've had a couple situations where it's been this
weird, awkward, that they expected you.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. See, but women have the ability to encourage the men. Women are the nurturers, and to nurture the men and remind them that it's honorable to have a job that pays the bills. Mm. No work that is legal is dishonorable if it provides.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I think part of the appearance of this pre-adulthood, of this period of life, has to do with an enormous change in the economy. And I know this sounds kind of dry, but just think of the kinds of jobs that are now possible for people that didn't exist 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, for those who go to college, they graduate, and many people go, okay, now what? And the choices are innumerable, you know, and I think it takes a while for many people to figure that out. And there are a lot of wrong turns that they take, and a lot of indecision in the time. But, you know, I guess that's a question. Are you talking about guys who are in their 30s who are still lost?
In some instances.
Yeah.
And I mean, and I'm not saying that there aren't the, you know, similar issues. Like I said, I mean, with the women, you see a lot of that stuff cropping up too, with, you know, attitudes as a result of that. So it's not like we're, you know, not culpable in some sense, but yeah, very much. I mean, I had a guy, I'll just tell the story briefly. One of my friends married a girl who came to our church, started pursuing her, and she actually asked him, she said, "Why did you choose me?" And he said, "Because you were the one girl who didn't seem to have it together." Now, she was extremely offended by that.
Yeah.
But she just kind of took it at physically. Yeah, she still married him, but she understood where he was coming from in saying that he had that need to feel needed, and no one else appeared to need marriage or to need a relationship, and he seemed kind of expendable. Now, I think that goes both ways. I mean, I kind of blaze away at guys who have that needy, you know, need to be needed, whatever there. But then women, you know, too, we shouldn't be perpetuating that either. So
Lisa, it all comes back to getting married. We were made for marriage. We were made for each other. If you believe in a creator, we were created to be married. And the both sexes benefit from marriage.
I do think that's true.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so the action point for today is get married.
Henderson
Kay just
Thanks
said
a
it.
Lot.
There's research to support it. Go check Kay Heimowitz out again. You want to make sure that you get the scoop on all her stuff, her articles, and her book is Marriage and Caste in America, Separate and Unequal Families in a Postmarital Age. Whoa. Okay, so check it out. Check out all her articles, too. Make sure you get the man-child one and the girl one, too. What's
New
the girl?
Girl Order. New There's girl another order. One that I think your listeners would be very interested in called Love in a Time of Darwinism.
Okay. Love in a Time of Darwinism. Read that. Write to us at editor@boundless.org. Let us know what you think, and we'll make sure to pass on some feedback to you, Kay,
I'd love
so you can
to
get
hear.
The yeah. voice on the street. So okay. thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
In the darkness, I was walking. I was blinded to my sinfulness, and then you came to me. You spoke so lovingly, and to my surprise and joy, you drew near to me. Now I've seen your grace in a thousand ways, working good in me where there was no good thing. And here I stand amazed by your awesome ways and your great love displayed. Will ever hold my
Okay, we are ready for this week's inbox, and I have Candace by phone. Hey, Candace.
Hi, Lisa.
Okay, we've got a fascinating topic this week from Anna. And Anna basically starts out, I'm going to kind of summarize her email because she goes into a lot of detail. And bless her heart, she just gives us a whole personal history here. So, Anna, we love it. But here's what she's talking about. She basically says, she talks about the hair topic, the blog post about hair, which got like 300 comments or something crazy, and how men tend to prefer women with long hair. Well, she says that she has difficulty growing her hair out. And so she talks about that kind of as an example of saying, how much stock should women put in like their boyfriends or their husband's preferences? And then how far should we go to address them? So, you know, she says, and what about other adjustments I could purchase that he'd find enjoyable? She knows we've talked about plastic surgery in the past, blah, blah, blah. How much is too much? I mean, you could go eyelash extensions. You could go into colored contacts. You could, you know, get Botox or whatever. Let's talk about the issue of attraction and what you do that's natural and what is going a little bit too far.
This is such a relevant question for women. I think we tend to feel insecure about how we look, whether it's because the guys in our lives don't seem to be responding or because we're just competitive with each other. I don't know about you, Lisa, but I tend to think more about what the women I'm going to hang out with will think about my new outfit than about what Steve will think.
Because they're the only ones that are going to comment.
Exactly.
That's why.
I will say when I met Steve, I had very short hair, and unbeknownst to me, he preferred long hair, which Jeff's hair post has now proven to be the case with any and all male species.
But he's back in the booth, by the way, Candace, and I just saw him smirk, FYI.
Oh, good.
So you can address that when he gets home.
Let's just talk about how long Jeff's hair used to be. That could be another Q&A. Long hair in men. But no, getting back to this issue, I didn't realize that Steve preferred long hair. But as my hair grew out, I would think it would be safe to say he was sort of warming up to me.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe whereas a guy won't be commenting on how much he loves your short, sassy cut, as you grow it out or change it, if you start to notice him complimenting you more, that's a good indication that he is liking the direction you're going. And so I think you want to make the most of the beauty God gave you. If you happen to have thin hair, you know, hair that won't easily grow out or the texture doesn't work with a really long style, maybe it's super curly or kinky, then certainly you shouldn't try to be who you're not by doing things that are artificial. You know, hair extensions are fun, and I think of them more as sort of a temporary or, you know, something you can try on, but not necessarily something you'd want to have to maintain for the rest of your life. So if a man falls for you because you got something that you thought of as a temporary or fun thing to try for a month, and now you're expected to maintain it for the rest of your life, I'm not sure that's a great scenario. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think a lot of times women don't understand, like, the stuff that we think is kind of funky or fun, like, we don't realize that guys may have a different interpretation of that. Because I actually had, this was like a couple years ago now, or I've gone through a few phases of this, where I actually had the striped hair, and like a la the Kelly Clarkson Thankful album, her first one. It was very striped. And I had this one guy tell me that it was intimidating. Now, I would have never thought that, but yeah. I guess it was helpful to hear that because, you know, maybe he just, I guess guys generally don't like things that look unnatural.
Well, I think you're right. They like things that look organic. Mm-hmm. and if you push them on it, maybe they would finally figure out that they like the feminine.
Yeah.
Even though they might not call it that. So I think you want to go for true beauty and not just trendy.
Yeah. I just said thanks for the advice and you're an idiot and get out of my life. Reasons why I'm still
single.
And so
the relationship didn't work for so many reasons.
No, I thought that was good. Okay, so women know what they can and can't do as far as like what's actually possible with their looks. Mm-hmm. So what's possible, what's reasonable, what's biblical or not, or just wise for getting into stuff where you're actually gonna, you know, really put down some cash for things?
Yeah, well, and I mean we've written about this before on Boundless and talked about in one case, an eye surgery that would change the look of your eyelids. I'm just not as eager to recommend something permanent or really expensive or potentially medically risky unless there is a medical reason that you need to do that alteration. But I think of surgery as sort of a last resort. I say make the most of what you have with things that you can pick up at, you know, the Origins makeup counter as opposed to the hospital.
Yeah. Do you have any advice for guys then who, I mean, should guys just remain silent on this? Or what if there's a guy there who's like, I'd really like to suggest to my girlfriend that she do X, Y, Z?
I think the men need to check their motives.
Yeah.
Because a man who is asking a woman to make a change purely for his benefit really is being selfish. And that's not the kind of relationship that we're called to as believers. We're called to be other-centered, to lay down our lives for one another. If a man is dating a woman who has a physical defect that he knows causes her personal anxiety and pain, I don't think it would be out of the question for him to be supportive, at least, or encouraging if she brings it up to say, I can understand that and I would support you in that. But not mm-hmm. ultimately just for his own selfish gratification, but because it would benefit her.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I think these are good thoughts, Candace. I think it's helpful. I mean, it's, you know, like I said, many of my girlfriends have talked about this, everything from should we wear heels around guys who are shorter because, you know, maybe that makes them feel bad about themselves to
makes them feel short.
to, you know, eye makeup. What kind of eye makeup is too much? What's too dramatic?
Right.
What's, you know, when my parents were dating, my dad actually just assumed my mom was an unbeliever because she wore a lot of makeup. And I mean, this was back in the early 50s, but my mom was from the East Coast and it was very much the powdered face and the red lipstick and all of that at that time. And he just figured she was some kind of Jezebel and wasn't going to have anything to do with her. And so she actually had a friend tell her, do not wear so much makeup. And she changed her look and my dad became interested.
Well, there you go. And so to the ladies, I say, hey, ask him what he likes. Do you like long hair? Do you like short hair? Do you like it striped?
Yeah.
Get his input.
Exactly. Because it's not like once you start dating someone seriously, it's not like you're not, you know, prodding him for a few wardrobe changes here and there or whatever. I mean, let's just be honest,
lose
people.
Lose the sweatshirts, guys. We're all...
Yes, and do not, we all know now that my hatred of Disney character shirts, which are currently on sale at Walmart, and I don't know who is wearing these things, but it's literally just like Minnie Mouse emblazoned across their chest. No one needs that, people. No one needs it. So, well, Candace, thank you very much for weighing in on this topic. Always helpful to just kind of cut to the chase and give people some real truth about what they should be doing or not be doing. So
that's what we're all about, real truth, Lisa.
We are.
You're welcome.
We are. I have a little bit of an 80s-ish eyeliner on today. I mixed it up, and it's almost a green. So
ooh.
I'm going to go and ask 5 people what they think of it and see if I get rid of it or keep it based
awesome.
On that. So, all right. Well, you have a great rest of your day.
Thanks, Lisa. You too.
Thanks. Okay, everyone, as always, we want to hear from you. Write to us at editor at boundless.org. Tell us what kind of eyeliner you're wearing today and other salient bits of info that we should know about. Make sure you're tuning into the show next week. I'm going to go ahead and be reporting on my trip to the Catalyst Conference. Again, for those of you who know about this, make sure that you're giving me a shout out. Send me an email or find me on Facebook. Can't wait to share my thoughts from that. In the meantime, please be listening to the show. Pass it on to your friends. Appreciate your pastors. Do all the things that we're encouraging you guys to do. It's just awesome. So, and of course, you know, just continue to be friendly toward us because we need it. We need the affirmation. So have a great week, everyone, and we'll see you around next time for The Boundless Show. I'm your host, Lisa Anderson.
The Boundless Show is a production of Boundless.org. Focus on family.